listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, spray and goop everywhere. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hi, your buddy, Mike the Ghoul here, your friendly neighborhood ghoul, as we're talking about Spider-Man back in theaters.
Yes, number 4 of the Tom Holland chain is in, and before we even talk about that, that is a momentous milestone. So far, we have not had any Spider-Man franchise make it to 4, and in fact, I think in Marvel even, there's only been one hero that's made it that far, and that was Thor with Love and Thunder. Lucky number 4 is hard to do, because these movies take 3 or 4 years between them, and by the time you get around to 4th or 5th, the actors are starting to age out of the characters, and
right,
I mean, at some point we're gonna discuss Marvel's just in general and like how they might recast people, and I'm like, yeah, you know, don't do it like Bond. Actually get a 20 year old to play a character instead of a 40 year old, you know.
I agree completely. But you know what? They kind of got lucky here, right? Because I was wondering the same thing. Like, they age out. Like, how are they going to make the movie make sense? And, like, they literally do, like, a 4-year time jump in, like, 15 minutes of the movie. So it made sense to me, like, why they look older, why they look, you know, like they're more young adults now rather than just out of high school. And I think that was a good decision because it made me buy the world that Peter was living in at that time, you know?
A necessary decision at the very least, considering again how long it takes between these movies, and there was, you know, a 4-year gap between these, especially after the spell that he had Doctor Strange made. They gotta explain that. They can't just like, and you know, 4 years later it's fine. No, yeah, you gotta do something there. Anyway, Spider-Man Brand New Day came out in theaters a couple weeks ago, and we're finally getting around to reviewing it, which is not a bad thing, because at least now we can discuss not only its box office but also do spoilers and not feel bad about it. Yeah.
Feel guilty. I want to talk about this movie. This was good.
This movie was really good. I would put it in the tops of the Spider-Man franchise. Like, I think depending upon my day, whether or not I think it's the absolute best is iffy.
I don't know. Like, I that's a really good question for, like, another podcast. Like, we could rank the Spider-Man and, like, their movies. That could be an interesting one because, like, I want to say Tobey Maguire's is the one that just stands out for me because it was the first one that really did it right. But, like, and I'm not going to say Andrew Garfield's are up there, but those were also better than they got credit for. And these last few with Tom Holland have been very good. So that could be an interesting debate. So, but this is definitely up there for me, too, in the, at the very least, upper echelon of some of the crap Marvel's put out lately.
And I'd feel bad in that particular debate because Andrew Garfield's movies are crap. But
I don't
think
they're that
really
bad.
Good. He's really good, though, especially him and Emma Stone and like the chemistry that they have. Like, they make those movies watchable in a way that if they didn't have that chemistry, if they didn't have Emma Stone powering through along with Andrew Garfield, it wouldn't work. But obviously, we're not talking about those right now. We're Tom Holland and Zendaya and the other guy.
And Ned.
Ned. But no.
The token friend.
I saw this opening weekend, and you had those two or three people that after the movie ended, they stood up and clapped, and you're sitting there going, Guy, no one from Marvel is here. I understand what you're saying, but no one cares, you know?
I saw it last night. We're, what, almost 3 weeks in, and there were still people clapping in my theater. So, I mean, come
on. We've all seen it now. Like, it's made $2 billion at the box office. We've literally all seen it now.
And in fairness, maybe it was like, you know, a family clapping with their little kid or something, but that was some loud clapping going on. I'm like, it's a Tuesday night. Like, come on, you guys already know this is a good movie.
I mean, in fairness, that's probably the best thing they've got going on a Tuesday night. So
Fair enough. Yeah, my theater is amazing on the Tuesday night, man. I love going to see movies there for the podcast. Nobody's there. I'm 5 minutes from the theater. It's awesome.
This was a good movie. It's one of the best movies. It's impressive because Tom Holland Spider-Man has had just a solid run. I think the weakest was Far From Home, the European trip one, which wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good. But like 3.5 good films, basically, not even counting the crossovers that he's been in. This is an incredible run for a superhero character, and it's obviously paying off because $2 billion and still going.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, like, by looking at the budget, a modest $225 million by Marvel standards, too. So, like, they didn't really throw $500 million at this movie like they have some others. And they're getting some good return here, which is notable for them because it's been not so great lately.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's you think that $220 million they put in, but they really only spent $110 million on it because Sony spent the other $110 million. And then It's Spider-Man. A Spider-Man movie hasn't made less than $700 million. They were making their money back no matter what. It just so happens that in this case, it was a sure thing because $2 billion and counting. There's
star power too. Tom Holland and Zendaya, like, you know, young stars, people love them. So it's a good thing they have going on here, and they continue to not fuck it up with this one, which is nice.
Yeah, this one will probably make 2.5 easy. Whether it gets to 3 is a question. For a while there, it had the momentum, but it's kind of slowed a little. But it's going to be one of the top 5 movies of all time, no matter what. And I think it's good enough to warrant that. You know,
I agree. Like, you know, the story was good. We were saying earlier, how are you going to kind of play off, you know, the aging of the characters? And like, you really kind of like felt Peter like in that time skip right there. And it's not like a time skip in the sense of like, you know, flash frame 4 years later kind of thing. Like, they show like little stuff. He's watching the Instagram stories throughout the year of what his friends are doing, wishing he could be there. And yet, you know, he's throwing everything he can into his work and going out there being the good, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And Yelena got it. He just looks sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to take a moment here to thank our week's sponsor, Gizmonic Industries. Whether you need to blow stuff up or you're just platforming some B-Real slop into the most watchable puns in the galaxy, look for Gizmonic. Gizmonic Industries, such a prestigious research facility that everybody, even the janitors, were inventors. Thank you this week to our sponsor.
So Spider-Man Brand New Day finds Spider-Man 4 years later, after he made that wish spell thing that basically made everyone forget that he existed, which there's some stuff we'll discuss about that because continuity's a little unclear on that. And that's some of the small issues I had is what does this actually mean for him long term?
Right.
But so he's been working for 4 years as Spider-Man, basically not making personal connections because what he took away from the previous film was people are happier if I'm not involved with them. If I'm involved with them, they die because Spider-Man. So don't connect to people. So he's basically become a workaholic. He's more spider than man now. And he gets himself into a situation with a villain where he's chasing down the villain towards the Department of Damage Control offices, their storage facility. And he discovers that someone has a power to basically shift from body to body to body. And they're looking for something. But what specifically, he doesn't know. And because they try to read his mind, but can't because of his spider powers, which is just a happenstance that allows us to not worry about Spider-Man being taken over.
It's a MacGuffin, you know, right here.
It's a convenience at the best of terms. Anyway, this convenience protects him, but because they were able to at least somewhat read his mind, they figure out how to track him down, and they figure out who Spider-Man is, Peter Parker, and use that against him to try and get leverage and get him to stay away. And they threaten him by going to kill off MJ, Michelle. And so he has to invest himself back into his people's lives, even though he doesn't want to, while he's trying to also track down this villain who is searching for something at Department of Damage Control and forcing him to make a whole bunch of cameos with some Marvel characters.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, we get some good little feel-good, tickle-your-brain cameos. You know, we get Yelena with a funny scene in the bathhouse. We get Bruce Banner at the university there, you know, doing the teaching thing. But then I forgot he was in this movie, but he stole a lot of the show for me. It was John Bernthal as Frank Castle, the Punisher, which is their back and forth. I want to see a buddy movie between Spider-Man and Punisher now so bad. They were so much fun together.
They were a good time. And some of that credit is just due to John Bernthal being a very good actor in general and being able to work with it. And of course, Tom Holland is a very solid Spider-Man. I've thrown shade at him in the past because I don't think he's strong outside of Spider-Man. But when you're laughing on a Breaking Bad pile of money, who cares if you can do anything other than that? They say he stands to make $100 million in residuals and, like, points on the movie from this. And it's just like, well, you feel like he's like the Harry Potter kids. He doesn't have to do anything else. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, you know, that is what we call, you know, a fantastic business decision. And he's going to be making some bank for a while. And, you know, he's young. He's still in his 20s, I assume.
30. I think he just turned 30.
Just turned 30,
Soon after he married Zendaya, so.
Gotcha. You know, look at that. Love story in real life, too. I forgot about that until you pointed it out. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's all adorable and feel good, you know. Maybe they're our new golden era couple, we'll see.
But yeah, the plot of Spider-Man, I wouldn't say it's really not that deep, all things considered. It's very simple to summarize. It only has a few key plot points. That's mostly because it's less of an action-adventure movie and more of a Spider-Man relationship film. Him trying to reconnect with people, him trying to figure out how he can do it, if they still remember him, how they're going to remember him. And so it's a lot of circling around. It's not plot intensive, it's really just character dynamics.
Right, right. And when he goes to see them, I mean, how do I inject myself without, like, you know, injecting myself? And, like, just when he thinks, okay, maybe this isn't so bad, he sees something that leads to another big plot point of the movie and the changes that he's going through. And, you know, this, it's not puberty this time, at least, but it is somewhat of a metamorphosis, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they hint at, I think in the comics they've also said this, but, like, spiders go through, like, three phases of life, and Heath could, in theory, be moving on towards his second phase of life, which it's not really a spoiler because it's in the trailers, but Peter ends up developing these bio web shooters like Peter 2 had, quote unquote, the Tobey Maguire Peter. And so it's like, is this a change that he wants? Is he able to control it? Is he becoming more spider than man, like we joked about earlier? And like in the cartoons, the old cartoon and the comics, he actually grew extra arms, and that was a thing.
I remember
for
that.
A little... Yeah, that's so, like, they didn't go that far in this movie. Spoilers.
I was wondering
if they were going to as well. That would have been cool. Wandering around like Goro, you know, but we didn't get that. Where's my Goro Spider-Man? Come on.
I know, right? Right. We kind of sort of, I guess, got that in Avengers Endgame when he had like the things come out when he was
the
on
Iron
thing.
Spider. Yeah.
The Iron Spider. So they kind of gave the people that do want to see that a little bit of a thing already. But I thought they were going to do that, and I'm glad they didn't, because that would have just been a little too cheesy for me.
It would have been weird.
But it was an interesting theory about it, though, because like it's Peter evolving into the next version of himself, but like, because Peter is not just Peter, it's that next version of Spider-Man too, and like he's really in conflict internally. He's his own worst enemy in this movie. He's almost like the quote-unquote villain of the movie himself, you know. There's another villain, but it's really dealing with his situation of how he figures himself out that's going to be kind of the real driving factor of his success in this movie.
Yeah, and on the topic of that villain, we could just basically spoil it at this point, because everyone knows now. Like, it was spoiled within days of the movie coming out, but the villain, quote-unquote, is Jean Grey from, eventually, the X-Men. I mean, that movie's already been cast. She's already showing up in cast photos for it. We know she's going to be there. She will be an X-Man eventually. So Jean Grey is the girl who's sending her mind, as we see her, she can, quote-unquote, jump, or whatever they call it. Basically bounce from brain to brain within a distance, which is a power that's really hard to reckon with. Because she's both them, but it's pretty clear that she's also herself at the same time, moving around and ambling and all that. So how does that power work? And how is it that she can continue pushing her mind towards other people in hops? It's a convenient power that's really hard to explain.
And, you know, it really is. And, like, Jean Grey in the X-Men universe, you know, she's very much like she's a Charles Xavier, like a telepath. But they never really give you what she can exactly do. Just she's insanely powerful. Mm-hmm. And you get that in this movie, the power of Jean Grey and what she's capable of. And, you know, she can even, you know, here as a, I guess you can even say she couldn't have been much more than like 17. I guess they were maybe playing her off in this movie,
like that,
somewhere in there. Like maybe her sister was 19, but like they might have even been a little younger than that. So she's not the Jean Grey we know from other movies and other media, perhaps. And it's interesting to see her little evolution in this movie too, to kind of push her, like, you know, she teeters even back then, I guess, on the dark side of things. So it's she's always had it in her, I guess, is my point. So it's an interesting power she has that's never really been explained, like you said.
And I do appreciate that Marvel isn't just making it, oh, it's the Phoenix Force and they have to stop her from having this, like, I don't mind if they decide to eventually do Phoenix, but Phoenix needs to be an external force and not just an evil side of her own mutant power that Charles decides to suppress, which is the plot line we've gotten twice in the movies and makes no fucking sense. So
right, but we didn't, thankfully. They didn't go down that road here.
I've seen some people like wonder, how do you walk her back from that? And I'm like, that's why you put her in the school for gifted youngsters. And then she learns to become herself when she's part of that initial, quote unquote, first class, but not the Fox first class, you know, with like Cyclops and Iceman and Dazzler and whoever else they fucking put.
Yeah, Wolverine was in there. You know, maybe we get another Wolverine. Like,
Wolverine comes later, I think. I think he was an adventure.
Oh, yeah.
People.
He was. He was.
Colossus,
so
maybe. I don't know the X-Men. There's a lot of people. I know they've supposedly already cast one of the actresses we really like, Indy Navarrete, as Rogue. She's very good.
Yeah.
She apparently passed up... Well, I was going to save this for a different... Well, we'll just do it here. It's fine. She apparently passed up starring in Heat 2 to be Rogue, and I'm sitting there going, that's financially smarter. Like,
yeah.
Heat 2 might be the more dramatic movie that would give you some real acting to do, but Rogue will pay for your life for the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah, if you can slide in on the sly like that into, like, a big role. Like, Rogue is a big part of the X-Men story.
It's, you know, the X-Men. You're getting four or five movies as Rogue, and then you never have to work. It's the Harry Potter. It's the Spider-Man. You never got to work again, you know?
Yeah. Halle Berry's been set for life since playing Storm.
Yeah,
no. She's still a fantastic actress as it is, but, you know, she can pick and choose what she wants to be in now.
You make that superhero money, and you don't have to do anything else. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. made bank on superhero money, and so that's it's easy to walk her back from the evil things she did, and she did murder some people. Let's not downplay this. Some people died while they were under her control, but it's not hard to walk that back eventually, because that's kind of what Xavier School is there for. If they can try and find a way to give forgiveness to Magneto, Jean Grey hasn't done anything that can't be walked back in this film.
Oh, 100%, right? I mean, she's complex and complicated, and you see that right from the jump here as they're kind of building this character. Interesting that they drop her in a Spider-Man movie as her first appearance, but it was kind of cool, and I think it worked for the story, because I think Peter needed somebody like that to kind of... He wasn't going to have a Tony. There isn't a Captain America around to pull him out of something. He needed someone he could relate to, I think.
Yeah.
And Jean was a correct choice, at least in the
context.
Theme of the movie for me,
She's not as big a part of it, so she's not pulling away attention from him. Like, the first three movies really felt like Spider-Man had to have a parent to guide him. He had to have Iron Man in the first film. He had to have Mysterio, who eventually became a bad guy, in the second movie. He had to have Doctor Strange over his shoulder, and then two other older Spider-Men to keep an eye on him. He's never really just been allowed to have his own movie. And while Jean Grey is here, and so is Yelena and the Punisher and the Hulk in smaller roles, none of them pull away from the fact that this is primarily a Spider-Man movie for once. And he gets to actually just be Spider-Man, which is great.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, all those people, to your point, they don't detract away from this movie. This is not an X-Men launching, you know, superhero movie. And, like, you would think they do that with a Spider-Man movie anyway. But it's dangerous to kind of meld something like that when you're doing another big reset on a big franchise like X-Men. So to put an important character in there, this did feel much more like an X-Men cameo in a Spider-Man movie rather than a Spider-Man movie that's going to launch the next X-Men kind of thing, you know?
Disney Marvel is clearly trying not to do what The Amazing Spider-Man 2 did, which was, let's mostly focus on adding other people in as plot elements and then forget that we need to actually have a real Spider-Man movie going on. Yes, Jean Grey is here, and yes, that hints towards the X-Men, which has already got a release date of 2028. They're already working on it. We knew this was going to happen. But it never feels like, oh, it's Jean Grey and she's taking over the movie for like half an hour. No, she's here, but she is just, you know, villain of the week for what Spider-Man is doing. If she wasn't here, you could insert any one of a number of other villains for a similar plot line, and then it would work. It just so happens that this is a convenient way for Marvel to say, oh, by the way, the X-Men are coming, without, like, ever once name-dropping the X-Men. Like, she gets on a bus for God knows where, you assume it's Xavier School, but they don't say it because they're trying to hold that back and be conservative about it, and I like that.
I do too, and I was going to point that out, so I love that you said that, because, like, they do leave her ending a bit ambiguous, right? Like, she's clearly going maybe to northern New York, you know, there's a lot of trees and stuff.
We don't know.
You know, she doesn't exactly pull it, she, you know, bleh, but she doesn't pull in front of, like, you know, an iron gate or something. She's just traveling on a bus.
She doesn't pick up a pamphlet saying, need to get over your homicidal urges, come to Xavier School for gifted
And I was really, I was worried for a second that, like, as she's on the bus and she, like, you know, she's going, she leans again, I was worried that you'd hear, like, Charles' voice, like, hello, Jean, like, in her ear, and we didn't. So they really held back.
Some dude with a cigar sitting down going, what's up, bub? Like,
oh man.
No, like, that was good.
Bugs Bunny with the carrot or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been too on the nose. We're clearly going to get a sequence like that in either Doomsday or Secret Wars or whatever. And that's where they can do their X-Men launching and setting up the next universe and blah blah.
Right.
And it's fine there. I'll accept it. But it was good to have it not be here, because this is definitely a Spider-Man movie. I think if they'd done that here, it would have overloaded and people wouldn't have liked it as much.
I believe, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're onto something there. Like, we've gotten so much of that, like, there's either not a plot that can make sense, or there's too much plot and you're setting up too much bullshit. Like, we haven't gotten a solid just movie with a little bit of, like, foreshadowing in a long time from Marvel, and they kind of nailed it here. This was fantastic.
Yeah, and they didn't even force us with a tag ending that says, now these 8 extra characters are going to come here. The tag ending they gave was just a little blip of something, and that was it. But with the characters, that not only Jean Grey being here as a villain, which ties into her own stuff, but let's say that somehow this movie had bombed and Marvel decided after Avengers they weren't making anything more after that. I don't think any of us would have been sitting there going, man, I was really hoping for that Jean Grey movie, because she wasn't a big enough factor to warrant that. Like, the potential could have been there, but oh well, whatever.
You would have the debate then at that point. Well, you know, what made the movie terrible? Was there was Spider-Man, or was the X-Men that was in there? It could have just really, like, divided people's thoughts on the movie. They kind of stayed in a really good lane here.
But I liked the cameos that we got. I felt like this felt like if you were to read comics of Spider-Man. Yeah. He's traveling around the city, and once in a while another hero pops up. Like, he sits on a rooftop and suddenly the Black Cat shows up. Or, like, he's running through the streets and Captain America goes past doing something else. That's what happens in the comics. So him going to Yelena for some advice, or him talking to Bruce Banner, and then, like, Punisher and Hulk showing up later for short sequences. That's like the comics. It's not detracting. It just helps to build that shared universe without forcing it.
Exactly. And this really gave that, like, comic book feel. We've gotten a lot of just really serious Marvel movies that were just too much, or you're trying to make too much stakes here. Like, this had its stakes, but it did interject some of that classic comic book aspects of the movie into there. Like, I like that point of going to see Yelena in the bath. It's a little comedy sequence there. She's like, you don't ever take off the mask. He's like, no. And she's like, all right, whatever. And then, like, you know, his toes out of the water and he's like, sorry. Like, it's something you could see, you know, in a comic book almost. And they brought it to screen, and it could have been stupid, but it was actually funny and it worked.
Yeah. So, no, I liked this. I thought this was a good Spider-Man movie first and foremost. And that's what really, really we needed, was just this. And it builds well on the setup from No Way Home. It pays that off without just immediately being like, oh, we're just going to walk it all back. It then, like, gives a new plot. It then sets Peter up for what's coming next in his life. Still leaves us from lingering questions, especially with that handshake he has with Ned at the end. We don't know what's going to happen. Now we want another movie to see what it is. And we hope that he somehow survives the Doomsday Secret War storyline, which I'm sure he will, and may even get a symbiote at that point, because that's what you set those ones up for. But it is cool. I think we are set on the path for another couple movies with him. And then at that point, you probably have to do Miles Morales and retire him, because then Tom Holland will be like 40 and will just need to age out at that point.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, we're gonna get maybe a max, like, you know, 2-3 max movies left of him, and maybe only like 2 of them are actual Spider-Man movies. Spider-Man, like, this kind of thing. He doesn't just appear in, like, the Avengers or something. Because we can get maybe, like, 4 or 5 of him, like, throughout the Marvel series. Like, maybe they bring him back as an older Spider-Man in a movie 10, 15 years from now. Like, that could work, maybe. But, like, this little pocket they're in right now, it's a finite amount of time. So take advantage of what you got here.
Yeah, so it was a good one to get. I'm very glad it paid out the way it did. It paid off very well. And whether we get 2 more with him, or they decide after this to only do, like, 1, or to recast and go to Miles Morales, or who knows, whatever. But this was a good one. This puts him in a good place no matter what they do with his character after this.
Yeah, I agree. And I am down for a Frank Castle, Peter Parker buddy movie here, because, like, you even see the Punisher go through a bit of an arc in this movie here. Like, I thought he was going to call, you know, Peter fucking dumb kid at the end for taking the bullet, but he was like, he thought it was brave, and it really touched him. So, like, you know, Peter, even not only did he maybe get things back with Ned and MJ, like, we'll see, like you said, they left it ambiguous, he at least found somebody in Frank Castle here, and even Jean to an extent, even though she's gone, like, he knows he's not alone now. So you hope for the best with that handshake at the end, but, like, you don't know. They did leave that a little bit to come, but we want to see it. We want to see what happens next. And they did a good job baiting it there.
It did. So, yes, this is a good film. Obviously, everyone already knows it's a good film. It's been out for a while. It made $2 billion. It might make $3 billion. We're all on board with this. So, hey, enjoy your Spider-Man while you can, because who knows how much longer Tom Holland is going to be in the role.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a finite amount of time here.
Yep, everyone ages out eventually. Except for us, because we're immortal.
Except Bond as well. Too,
right? just keep recasting him. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, smothering ourselves in black goo. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy, Mike the Ghoul here, gonna go and metamorphosize into his final form. We'll see y'all next time.